Welcome back to the Business of Government Hour. I'm Paul Lawrence, and this morning's conversation is with Ambassador Prudence Bushnell, Dean, Leadership and Management School at the Foreign Service Institute. And joining us in our conversation is Kim Hinsman.
The Leadership and Management School gets people joining the Foreign Service from all sectors, as well as those already within the Department of State. How many non-career ambassadors join the service, and how does the school help them to acclimate more quickly to their foreign posts?
About one-third of our ambassadors overseas are non-career people, and this has been a tradition since the Founding Fathers created the United States of America. One of the challenges that I have, an absolutely delicious challenge, is running the ambassadorial seminar, which helps people who are going out to be ambassadors, be they from the career service or non-career service, anticipate and plan for what they are going to be doing. We spend a day with our non-career colleagues, specifically orienting them to the culture and the language and the acronyms of the Department of State. And then in the two-week seminar, they interact with their career colleagues, looking at some of the issues that are going to be facing them. And my job is to help everybody, both career and non-career, look at what kinds of skills they have gained in their past and how to transfer it to the context of a chief of mission.
I understand that one of the career tracks that a foreign officer might select is political, where he or she may be asked to promote democracy and the rule of law in developing countries. How does one go about promoting democracy?
Easier said than done. You know, for most of us, we tend to think of democracy as a concept and as a theory. For us overseas who have the job of promoting democracy, it is real and tangible. So one of the things that we do is look at what do we mean by promoting democracy and what is going on in this country in which we are currently located. Democracy essentially is citizen participation. That's one way you can look at it. Let me take you to Kenya, where I was for 3 years and where we went through an election. When we looked at promoting democracy, particularly going up to a presidential election, we were looking at citizen participation. Who's participating? Are women participating? Over 50% of the population, very little participation. So in promoting democracy in Kenya, going up, leading up to the elections, we placed a lot of emphasis on working with women, getting women to recognize their political rights, their legal rights, and encouraging them to participate in elections. And in fact, there was a woman who was running for president. We did a lot of work on election monitoring among Kenyans so that they could monitor their own elections. That was very different from Guatemala, where I next served, where a lot of the issues we were dealing with were rule of law issues. And again, rule of law seems theoretical and pie in the sky. And what we tend to do is to look at, again, the circumstances on the ground to see where can we move in and help create a better system. One of the things we found, for example, in Guatemala, is there was a great deal of confusion on a crime scene or any scene as to who would do the investigating. The prosecuting attorney's office had investigators, and so did the police. The result was that the evidence was often tampered with and was absolutely useless in a trial. So one of the aspects of promoting rule of law was trying to get the Attorney General's office and the police to have a memorandum of understanding about how to treat evidence. So things that seem, as I say, very theoretical, turn into very, very practical issues. And you take it one step at a time depending upon the circumstances that you find, and those circumstances are different with every single country.
What management tools do you use to do that? I was thinking of the example where the two people with the two investigative, I mean, how did they come to figure out there should only be one and one person would be in charge of it?
Well, that's very difficult, particularly since the issue was between two branches of the Guatemalan government, and here we are the gringos, and, you know, stepping in and saying, okay, why don't you all do it our way? Actually, it's not just a management tool, but it's a training tool. How do you sit down with people and get them to see where the differences are in their approach, where the commonalities are in their approach, and how essentially they can get to yes? What I did a lot as ambassador was essentially facilitating. I do that a lot as a trainer. And I think that the skills of listening, active listening, the skills of finding commonalities are skills that are very important to managers, leaders, and diplomats.
How about promoting democracy and in different cultures? You gave the example where people were unused to perhaps women voting and working through that. But how about where they have a history of conflict and losing is probably, you know, resolved different ways than sort of acknowledging the winning as we do in elections? How do you promote democracy in a situation like that?
It becomes even more complicated because what conflict does is increase a state of mistrust. And if you think of democracy as participation, it's also power sharing. I am sharing in the power with my government. Conflict, on the other hand, is generally viewed as win-lose. I win, you're dead. That is not exactly power sharing, nor is that conducive to the kind of trust necessary for a democracy. In a lot of countries, the step to promote democracy after conflict is one of reconciliation, where people recognize what happened and come to grips with what happened so that they can then move on and create a democratic culture. And it has worked. If you look at South Africa, for example, it has worked in South Africa. It has worked in Salvador. In other countries, it's much more difficult. You certainly need, I think, a national consensus that we have got to come to peace with one another. And you need, I think, the leadership that is going to promote the kind of open and transparent systems that allow people to have some trust in the use of those systems.
Since development issues, environmental factors, and historical context can be so different from one country to the next, how does a Foreign Service officer translate his or her past experiences and apply them to new challenges?
There are certain skills that a Foreign Service officer has that can be taught. Language, of course, is one of the most basic ones. Before I went to Guatemala after my tour in Kenya, I spent 2 months, 8 weeks, learning Spanish. 6 hours a day, one-on-one. There was no place to hide. Now, if I felt like speaking Spanish or not, I did. I was very motivated because I kept having the thoughts of an ambushed press conference. And there's nothing like the thought of appearing stupid on television to make you want to learn a language and be a little smart. So we teach languages at the Foreign Service Institute. We teach all kinds of tradecraft courses. What we don't teach and what you can't teach is experience. And I think that people in the Foreign Service learn how to go into a different culture and observe and see what works and where they fit. And that is very, very important and something that you just get as a result of doing it from time to time. In many respects, it comes down to strategic thinking.
You've talked about promoting democracy and rule of law, sort of a, taking a very theoretical thing and making it practical. How do you measure the performance of how effective we are at doing those things?
By becoming very practical about it. We have a system in the Department of State of starting with strategic goals and moving them all the way down to performance indicators. So every single embassy overseas and every bureau in the Department of State has a program plan which is created and reviewed every year. And from that program plan, employees create their work requirements and their work objectives for the year with the performance indicators tagged to the performance indicators of the mission program plan.
That's interesting. Should other organizations establish a leadership and management school? We'll ask Ambassador Bushnell for her perspective when the Business of Government Hour returns.